Welcome to the Maintenance Mavericks podcast, where we talk about trends in maintenance, reliability, and asset operations. My name is Ryan. I'm your host, and I'm also the CEO and founder of Upkeep. Today, I'm super excited to have Nigel D'Souza here on the show. Nigel is the manager of facility services at a district school board in Central Ontario, where he also manages the entire maintenance and asset lifecycle planning portfolios across every single one of his schools. So welcome to the podcast, Nigel. How are you doing today? It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm fantastic. I couldn't be happier to be on the show today. And thank you so much for having me.
Of course, of course. Well, the way that we always kick the podcast off is have you share a little bit more about how you were first introduced to this industry and what your journey has been like?
Absolutely. I guess I'll start with when I was in school. So I was studying mechanical engineering. One of my profs was mentioning to the class whilst we were there that many of us would end up in the maintenance field. I had it in my mind, I didn't want anything to do with maintenance. I was going to be designing machines and doing something fantastic. And really what was in my mind was what was the typical engineer, the mechanical engineer, designing machines and whatnot. As we continued through the course, my prof even mentioned that, consulting was also a great avenue to head down to, share knowledge, bring excellence to different organizations and really see a lot of what's happening in the world, learn, as well as, again, share that knowledge. In my mind, again, I don't want to be a consultant either. I want to work for a single organization, asset owning. That would be my bread and butter. And so remember those two things. I didn't want to be in maintenance and I didn't want to be a consultant. After I graduated, I started my career in surface mining, and it was at a quarry as a production engineer, the mine plan, blasting and production plan. And eventually I took on the maintenance portfolio. Part of this was an expansion in my learning. So I was learning different areas of the operation. And when I was with the maintenance portfolio, out of necessity and frustration, I decided I was going to start optimizing the planning and scheduling processes. There were a lot of opportunities to streamline these processes, as well as the metrics that we were using for decision making. It kind of became my pet project, and I didn't realize it. But prior to that, I never realized I would have that much fun working on a maintenance program. So I ended up building my own Visual Basic tools for analyzing both production and maintenance information, and kept embracing maintenance planning and optimization. I spent a few years now through that and received an opportunity then to lead maintenance and asset management teams for a Crown agency in Ontario, which operates a significant portfolio of the water and wastewater operations across the province. And I remember on my exit from the quarry, the site manager, he was talking to the whole group, and they were kind of sending me off. And he mentioned that I'd really turned the operation into a science, a real scientific approach with business processes and the database decisions that have been put in place. So that was flattering for myself. Move over to the water and wastewater treatment industry, and that was a completely different animal. Dealing with facilities that were perpetually under construction due to expansion and upgrades and growing communities, extremely stringent regulatory requirements for production quality, as well as infrastructure maintenance, since there was due diligence required to make sure we were maintaining equipment and ensuring that those records were available for auditability. And this is from the regulators in case there were any illnesses, waterborne illnesses, or bypasses of the plant. So at the time, I used PAS 55 and the International Infrastructure Maintenance Manual as some of my references to formalize the structure for the program, and it needed standardization across the province. So I'm dealing with distributed teams, widely distributed sites. We're talking 8 to 12 hours to get from one location to another, and it was relatively complex. In starting to put the structure in place, the uptake was well received. Program was heavily weighted towards a risk-based maintenance program as opposed to true asset management. But as we were working through these processes, ISO 55000 started to pick up in the industry. And so there was starting to be more adoption of asset management. There was a lot of talk about asset management, but I don't know if there was a true understanding about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I started leveraging the information in that document, but there was a need for me to learn and grow more in this space. And so I started going to a lot of conferences, networking events. I joined our organization in Canada, PMAC. Management Association for Canada. I started getting involved in that community. I started off actually as the chapter president for the Greater Toronto Area. And from there, I became the member of the board of directors. I co-chair on the board to this day. So I'm in my second term there. And it's been an exciting journey with that organization as well. Just the interaction with other associations. And it's similar to the SMRP in the United States.
What a fascinating journey, Nigel. It sounds like, you know, Mecki didn't want to go into maintenance. Like, and I feel like that's a general theme across a lot of people, especially graduating from college. Like, you know, maintenance isn't the sexy profession that a lot of like Meckis and, you know, engineers want to go down. And that was kind of my route too. But you kind of find it, you get kind of like get trapped into this route and you realize that, again, like you can kind of turn maintenance from this, like, I don't know, spreadsheet mess into an actual science that has, like, you know, that utilizes, like, everything that you've learned and a hell of a lot more. So, you know, it sounds like you've really come to love this field and, you know, obviously a big part of PMAC and, you know, driving the board there. So it sounds like you've had a wonderful journey and you're going to stick around this industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's exciting. And as my son actually put it now, if I can share a quick story, he was in kindergarten and he had an assignment that he brought home from school and he showed it to me very excited. It was a picture. It had a picture of a building and beside the building, there was a line with, it was a diagonal line next to the building. I was like, okay, that's a really nice drawing. There's a building there. And he says, yeah, Dad, it's what you do. And look, there's a stick there. I'm like, oh, well, why is there a stick leaning against the building? He says, you're the guy that puts the stick next to the building so it doesn't fall over.
If only it were that simple, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, how did you get into, you know, managing the entire asset lifecycle for schools in school districts?
I spent a lot of time in water and wastewater, and actually there were a few life events that made me look a little bit more about what it was that I was doing, and I needed to actually travel quite a bit less just based on those life events. It was just a reflection. I needed to change my lifestyle. And so I had a couple of opportunities. One was a short-term stint that I did with facilities at a local municipality, and that allowed me travel a little bit less while still doing a little bit of travel for my consultancy on the side. And then I found a good opportunity with the Simcoe Muskoka Catholic District School Board. It's in a beautiful part of the country in central Ontario. The opportunity was to formalize and standardize practices in their maintenance management department, as well as to support standardized processes in identifying life cycle replacements and capital planning. And so that portfolio has been quite exciting. I've been there for about 3 years and I've been putting in place structure and processes so that there's standardization, alignment. There's just a complete transparency in how we make decisions for capital identification, capital prioritization, and decisions along the entire life cycle of assets from when they're acquired to when they're disposed.
Yeah. So I would love to like dig into that because I'm sure a lot of our podcast listeners go through this very same thing about capital allocation, how to find budget for maintenance. And I kind of know through personal experience that like school districts don't have the biggest budget. Pushing anything through is very difficult. And my gut says that there's a lot that we could probably all learn from you and how you manage, you know, capital expenditure and, you know, funding maintenance and liability to operate the school district through your years and years of experience here. So maybe we could kind of start there. Like, is there like a best practice you feel like for funding maintenance and reliability, across the board in municipalities to school districts?
So, yeah, absolutely. It is complex, and you're absolutely right. The funding side of the equation is very tight. So what we look to do is really balance our needs. We're looking at regulatory compliance, some of the stuff that you really have to do if you have no option. And then we look at the optimization overall of the program. What many need to understand is that there is investment that's required. And part of that investment is really your investment in 80% of your life cycle costs. So when we look at decision-making for budget allocation, whether it's an initiative in maintenance, an initiative for continuous improvement, capital expenditure, expansion of a facility, and expansions are going to be based on demand, on your customer demand. The approach that I've used in multiple organizations, not just in the school board, has been a prioritization matrix, similar to Kepler-Trago decision model. And I'll go through a little bit how that works. When you have distributed customers, and I treat them as customers, every school is a customer, even though mm-hmm. their respective customers, which are the students, every water and wastewater utility is one of my customers, and their communities that they serve are their customers, and their business environment is going to be different. The local regulations may be slightly different. Bringing all of my customers, the people that I serve, I bring them together to determine what are the qualifiers or these elements that influence or provide a sensitivity to their operation and the needs in their local areas. There's potential to harmonize that. So if we talk about the population, so a higher population impact would pose potentially higher risk. And so you want to put some weight towards population. There could be specific fines or regulatory compliance issues, which again have a bit more sensitivity in certain areas, but you can harmonize again to a dollar value. Which areas may have more sensitivity or not. You take all of these elements. So those are two examples, but you can use things like reliability metrics. You can look at where you have the poorest reliability and system within a facility. You could look at the overall cost or value of of a capital expenditure relative to the overall value of that site to help also provide some weight to it. So identifying all of these elements, I built consensus with the team. What needs to comprise these elements within the matrix? We have consensus on that. And then from there, I go through an exercise where I give everyone $100. You have $100 to spend on each of these different elements. And how would you spend it? Kind of like a dog voting type of thing. But they spend some money on each of the elements and you get a weight that's then assigned to them. Now, for each initiative and project, you can line it up within this matrix and apply a fixed value. So it could be those reliability metrics. It could be population served. It could be accessibility requirements because of the population requirements for the population. And with each of these initiatives, projects, improvement concepts that require investment, all of those can be put against this matrix and then prioritized. You then prioritize it. You have a list. It's ranked in order from top to bottom based on those scores. And you draw a line. It's where your budget is because you have it associated with each of those projects. Once you have that, once I have that list put together, I distribute that to each of my customers, each of the folks that are involved in requesting these projects and have a desire to get all their projects done.
Yeah,
they review it offline, and then I collect information on any disagreements. What doesn't make sense? What do we need to swap out based on the model? And those are the comments that we discuss. So we have a consensus meeting. We bring those together. We talk about what is it that makes sense within the priorities. What doesn't make sense? What didn't make the cut that should be on it? And we go through a discussion and consensus. And it's really on a minority of items. We're talking maybe 3-5% that there may be a little bit of discussion on, but for the of it. It's well documented. There's full transparency in how we came to the decisions, and it's something that everyone buys into. So we're all on the same page. You formed alignment across the organization. You formed alignment vertically through the organization.
That's awesome.
Alignment is key, right? That's key to success.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it sounds like you really have a robust like prioritization process that gets, you know, to your point, alignment across the entire organization, which is so good. I kind of want to ask, like, where does the original like budget come in from, though? Is it like a percentage of replacement asset value? Is it just a run rate of, you know, last year plus, you know, a percent or two? Is it something else?
So the way we're funded is based on enrollment. So the number of students that are in our school board. And then we do also get a capital allocation. So the capital allocation is based on the condition. So we do have condition assessments of our facilities, and based on the life cycle models that we have for those facilities, there's an allocation that's provided for a capital budget.
I see. Got it. So again, it's more about, so you do have a budget based upon the enrollment of each school. And again, it sounds like there's just a very robust prioritization project planning that goes into where the line gets drawn and what's like above that line, what's below it, what kind of gets dropped. And there's a discussion, my guess is, you know, whatever's on that like cusp of the line.
Yes, that is usually where the discussion happens. It's like, oh, it's so close. I need to get that in.
Yeah. What about some challenges that, you know, as you're going through this process, like what are oftentimes, you know, challenges that you see come up, you know, whether it's culture, whether it's the prioritization, whether it's, you know, the amount of money that you're able to spend and where you spend it, whether it's in, you know, in capital expenditure versus maintenance, you know, or reliability, you know, what are some of the challenges that you often see?
So challenges, I'm going to say that for the most part, in terms of the prioritization, like I said, that's been working quite well. But that's one piece of the asset management program or the asset management model, which at the board we haven't fully embraced yet. So we still have a bit of a journey to go through to establish full asset management. And that's actually where the challenge is getting executive leadership to buy into the concepts of asset management, particularly in an organization that doesn't get a lot of funding, as well as being in the public sector. Typically, public sector organizations, they won't move to the next step unless they're forced to. if they don't have to, they won't.
Yeah.
And part of the challenge here is it's not that anyone needs to be forced or any organization needs to be forced to move towards embracing asset management. But really what it is education and awareness on what asset management truly is and building that desire to then pursue it. Right. Once there's a true understanding of what it is, all of the different pillars that form asset management processes that are involved, the collaboration and the integration between everything, and how it provides optimal value for the organization. I think once there's a better understanding of that at the executive leadership level, there would be more of embracing that. I know for me, I've worked with a number of organizations and I've helped them on this topic. A lot of the time there's confusion as to what asset management is. And again, I'm going to the public sector. There are those same issues. And some folks think asset management is your asset registry. We have our assets documented and we're now doing asset management. But that again is just one part of it, right? Asset management is really deriving value from your assets. And we're talking about physical assets, assets, tacit knowledge that exists within the organization and the value of people. It's very much about processes and people. For the environment in Ontario and other parts of the world, I can speak to Ontario though, particularly the local government is being mandated to have asset management plans in place. Now going back to having your hand forced to put something in place, again, majority of organizations that were put in that position, they were looking for checking the box. We now have an asset management plan. And where does the asset management plan sit today? It's on a shelf somewhere. It's a static document. But in reality, it's a living document. It's something that's reviewed. Your business environment changes, so you need to understand the influences that that impact the organization. How does risk change? How does our decision-making change? And how do we now need to approach our investments?
Mm-hmm. So you talk a lot about, like, you know, the future of, you know, asset management and where you're trying to take that school district to really transform the way that they think about asset management. I want to also ask you, like, where do you see technology fitting into this equation, if at all?
Technology absolutely fits in, right? So I talked about the processes. Technology is the tool that you use to support those processes, to allow you to report, to perform analyses. There again, speaking from experience, there are many organizations that view technology as that magic bullet. It's something that will save money and time, which it does. It does to a certain degree. But if you jump into tools with bad processes, you're going to have a bad rollout. You're going to have a bad implementation. You're not going to realize any of those benefits that you hope for, right? The organization, they would be putting an investment into the technology, whether it's software or a tool, and they're hoping for specific results. They're hoping for improvement, whether it is, again, that savings in time or money. And again, if you don't focus on getting those processes right before you move to that transformation, you could be scratching your head wondering why things didn't work out, or two, you could be amplifying the problem and really you could have a result that's worse than what you originally did have.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, obviously we're a technology company, a little bit biased here, but I totally agree with what you're saying. Like, there's a lot of companies that jump in with bad process. And I think what technology really does is help accelerate the drive for change in good practice, good process at a business and within a plant. But to that regard, like, if you're trying to accelerate, you know, bad process or no process, it becomes this whirlwind of a mess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's really those processes and understanding the end game, like what decisions are you hoping to make with some of the information, right? So are you collecting information for a purpose, or is it just data that folks are collecting? I've seen stuff that's like information that organizations were hoping to use at some point. They've collected it for years, if not decades, and then they forgot what they were collecting it for.
Yeah.
those are some of the things to kind of avoid, but there should be an expectation that there's effort that's going to be required to get it right, right? Yeah. There's effort to review your processes, make sure you got them right, put them into the context of your application or your tool to bring that to reality. Test it, make sure it works. There's always going to be a need to make some fine adjustments. Sometimes your process may be wrong to begin with. You may have not thought about every single thing, right? And you need to bring up and need to be able to look at it from a different lens.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Nigel. Really appreciate all the amazing information, context about, you know, what you do, your journey, getting into asset management. The way that we always end our show is with a quick fire set of questions where we can leave our audience with a few extra golden nuggets of information. So I'll ask you a short question. Get your thoughts in 20 seconds or less. You ready to jump in?
Sure. Let's go for it.
All right. What's the greatest challenge to asset management over the next couple of years?
So asset management in the next couple of years, I think it's going to be financial pressures. And we talked about financial pressures. So it's definitely going to be, how do we make sure that we are still focusing on that investment and that value without cutting the potential opportunity that we may have?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing about your job and, you know, maintenance, reliability, operations, being that capital allocator, what is something that you believe that, you know, other people may not agree with you about?
So that's a tough question. So I'm going to see how I can answer this without sounding too crazy. So everyone believes that they can template or copy an existing asset management plan or strategy or process, which you can to a certain degree, but you really, again, have to bring it into the context of your organization. Again, there's effort, there is work that's required, and there aren't necessarily shortcuts. So here's a quick story, just to put it into context. This is not actually my story. It's a fellow that I met at Toyota Production. He headed up their lean practices. He shared a story about his wife who made the best roast ever. And everyone wondered what the secret of this roast was. So she explained it to him, how she prepared it, the seasonings, how long you put it in the oven for. And the one part of the recipe was you cut one end off the roast. So he asked, why do you need to do that? She said, that's how her sister showed it to her. And that's how she makes it. It always turns out perfectly. Mm-hmm. So he went and he asked his sister-in-law to show him how to make the roast. So she explained it to him actually over the phone, described again, the exact same process, seasonings, everything, and cutting the one end off the roast. When he asked her why she did that, she's like, well, that's how my mom showed me how to make it. And it always turns out perfect. So he went and he asked his mother-in-law to show him how to make this roast. And he went over to her house and she showed him. You season it. You set the oven to this temperature. You're going to put it in for this long. And just before she put it into the pan, she cut one end off and she put it in the pan. And he asked her, why did you cut the end off the roast? And she replied, well, I've been using this roasting pan forever and it's a bit small. So I always have to cut the end off the roast.
I can totally see that. It's like at some point when you're following a process, you lose all the context behind why we do what we do. And I was talking to someone else about this around PMs and why we do PMs. And, you know, oftentimes they're just these relics of what someone else did years and years and potentially decades ago. And people are oftentimes so afraid to change that process, that procedure, that we wind up doing like PMs on assets that don't even exist anymore.
The phantom assets or abandoned assets, abandoned in place. We're maintaining things that aren't necessarily operating anymore. But that's to that topic. Actually, RCM is a fantastic tool to review what it is we're doing and why we're doing it.
Yeah. All right, I love it. What's the most important lesson you've learned over your career?
People are the most important part of your business. Surround yourself with the right people. Assume good faith first. No one's waking up in the morning, coming to work and saying, I'm going to do a bad job today. I think people are the backbone of everything that we do. And it's the utmost important part of the organization, building the culture, positivity, collaboration, and inclusiveness.
100%. You know, what I always say to our team is that, you know, our people here, you know, our entire business is just a collection of people. And, you know, our team, people here, employees are the most important thing to, you know, building this business. Yes, we are a technology company. Yes, we sell software, but it's really the humans and the people, all of our, you know, teammates that, you know, essentially put in the hours to build the software, to build the technology that we can ultimately give to our customers. All right, Nigel, if you could go back and give your 18-year-old self one piece of advice, what would that be?
Push yourself outside of your comfort zone. So don't be hard-headed, fitting a definition of what you see as ideal or what you're already aware of. Be a pioneer and accept that, yeah, there's going to be failure along the way, but push yourself outside of the comfort zone. Myself, I can reflect on my past. I wasn't a comfortable public speaker. I was nervous about maintenance myself. Me today, I speak at conferences regularly. I do a lot of writing, publication. I enjoy it. It's again, put yourself in an uncomfortable spot. Find a mentor if you need to that will push you. You absolutely have to.
Yep, absolutely. You know, I was just again talking to our team about this. It's like, you know, to your point, push yourself outside of your comfort zone. You know, dare to do things that don't seem ordinary, because that's exactly what defines being extraordinary.
Absolutely.
What's one of the biggest takeaways that you hope our listeners are going to take from today's discussion?
Have solid practices, solid business practices that are backed by a positive culture and alignment, and that will bring tremendous value generation from your assets.
All right.
Patient will see success.
I love it. All right. Well, Nigel, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast. Can you share with all of our listeners the different ways that they can connect with you and follow you on your journey?
Absolutely. So you can find me on LinkedIn under Excellence in Leadership. And you can also reach out to me at Nigel@ElevateNextConsulting.com.
All right. Thank you again, Nigel, for joining us. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in today's episode of the Maintenance Mavericks podcast. Again, my name is Ryan. I'm the CEO and founder of Upkeep. You can connect with me. I'm very, very active on LinkedIn as well as Nigel. You can also shoot me an email at ryan@upkeep.com. I'll respond to everything. And I promise you that I read every single email that I get. I hope you enjoyed today's session. I look forward to connecting with everyone soon. Thank you again, Nigel. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much, Ryan.